VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk, coming your way from VCY America. Well, ladies and gentlemen, with a new year comes renewed challenges before the United States Congress and the Trump administration. And one of those ongoing critical issues pertains to illegal immigration and national security. What do we do with DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals? Is there a viable solution to it? How critical is the building of a wall? How has chain migration impacted this nation? What about the visa lottery? And what about the impact of sanctuary cities defying the federal government's immigration laws? Well, here to discuss these critical issues, we welcome back Mark Krikorian, the Executive Director of Center for Immigration Studies. The center is an independent, nonpartisan research organization in Washington, D.C. that examines and critiques the impact of immigration, both legal and illegal immigration, on the United States. He's provided frequent testimony before Congress. And with us today, Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let's begin with DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. As you're aware, this is a real hot-button issue going on right now. Some have been calling for a clean immigration bill. Others want DACA in the government funding bill. Some have said there should be amnesty. Others are saying no amnesty. Some have been wanting to negotiate certain items in exchange for DACA. Sort it all out for us, if you would.
Well, this DACA amnesty was something President Obama did illegally when Congress wouldn't pass something called the DREAM Act. So he basically tried to do it on his own. And what he did is give work permits to something like now about 700,000 illegal immigrants who came before they turned 16 years old. So it's presented, that's why it's called childhood arrivals, although a lot of them came at 14, 15, and, you know, in the old world, that's a lot of people, 14, 15-year-olds are frankly on their own. But a lot of them did come very young. And so that was an unconstitutional program. The President Obama did not have authority to do that. That was one of the things that President Trump railed against during the campaign. And President Trump has now canceled that program. It turns into a pumpkin, basically. It disappears in March. So those 700,000 illegal immigrants who have work permits will start losing their work permits. It'll be spread out over a while. So the question is, what do we do about it? And the president has said he's fine with properly amnestying this narrow, unique group of people who are unlike other illegal aliens. But he wants Congress to do it because it's not his authority to do it. He's president. He doesn't make the laws. And he also insists, and this is important, this is what much of the debate is about, he insists that instead of just amnestying that 700,000 illegal immigrants, which wouldn't solve anything, it would just lead to more amnesties in the future, there have to be some measures balancing it to limit the damage that that amnesty would cause. And there's two kinds of things. First, enforcement to prevent the wave of illegal immigration, new illegal immigration, that would be attracted by an amnesty. Because, you know, once you hear illegal immigrants are getting green cards, there are people who are going to say, hey, let me give it a try and see if I can get them too. So that's the first thing, is enforcement. The other thing every amnesty does is create downstream, several years in the future, extra chain migration, as it's called. In other words, the people who get legalized will now be able to sponsor their relatives who didn't come as children, their parents, maybe their brothers and sisters. Their parents can then sponsor their brothers and sisters and their families, and it just goes on and on. That's why they call it chain migration. So the issue, from my perspective, is we need to have tough enforcement measures, not just some border stuff, but more than that. We'll also get rid of the categories that allow extended families to sponsor relatives so that you can bring your wife or husband or little child. If you marry somebody abroad, you adopt a baby, and it's all legit and above board, you have every right to expect your fellow citizens to let you bring that person in, but not your adult brothers and sisters, your adult children, that sort of thing. That has to go. And so the issue is, what will end up in any kind of deal like that to offset the amnesty part? Democrats don't want anything to offset it. They want just a naked bill that does nothing but give amnesty. President Trump and the Republicans have said, look, we want to play ball. We think this is a reasonable point to amnesty this specific special group of illegals, but it has to have some other elements in the package, and that's what the fight is about.
Yeah, so we'll dissect this a little bit more. You had talked about this chain migration and that this very much needs to be part of the discussion. Is it fair to say that chain migration leads to illegal immigration?
Probably. We haven't written on that, but legal immigration of any kind also leads to illegal immigration. I mean, there's no way to really avoid that. But the main effect is that it leads to even more legal immigration, and it takes the decision over legal immigration away from the American people. So what happens is yesterday's immigrants are the ones who decide who tomorrow's immigrants will be. Rather than a system based, say, on skills or education that's, you know, neutral and objective yardstick, but it's based on what the people through Congress decided they wanted in an immigrant, you know, somebody who's educated or can speak English or what have you. That's really more the issue, is that it drives ever increasing legal immigration, although almost certainly does also drive a certain amount of illegal immigration too.
Now, are there quotas tied into how many can come through the chain migration?
Yes, there are. It's a complicated system, basically exists to make work for immigration lawyers. But there are caps on various categories. Just to give one, the adult brothers and sisters of American citizens category has a cap of 60,000 per year, which is a lot, but there's way more than that who want to come. So there's, I forget what the latest number is, but there's at least a million, if not more, people on a waiting list to come under that category. And this whole issue of waiting lists is something that has been plagued our immigration system, because basically we overpromise and underdeliver. And this is what you're seeing in this family chain migration. Because for instance, if we let in everybody who wanted to come in who was a brother and sister, you'd have, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 million immigrants a year, because everybody's related to somebody else.
Right.
But what we do now is limit it, but that results in waiting lists. And so what I would prefer, I think, and I'm not sure this is really central to the discussion today, but it underlies it, is that we decide which groups of people we really want to let in, you know, husbands, wives, and little kids, whatever it is, and then just let everybody in every year who fits that narrow description, so you don't have these ridiculous waiting lists.
I understand that Senator Tom Cotton has introduced some legislation that would either end or somehow limit this chain migration.
Yes, he has, along with Senator Perdue from Georgia. And then in the House, there's a companion bill from Lamar Smith of Texas, and it's called the RAISE Act, like to get a raise.
Mm-hmm.
I think they make up the names and then they come up with what the initials mean. You know, it's that sort of thing. It's a marketing gimmick. But the bill is very important. And as you suggested, the core of it is that it gets rid of these extended family categories, so it narrows the definition of family for immigration purposes to husbands, wives, and little kids. And that's it. And that would get rid of a lot of these categories and result in a reduction overall, of a pretty significant reduction in overall legal immigration going forward.
Mark Krikorian is our guest today from Center for Immigration Studies. Is there a connection with this chain migration and the visa lottery?
There is. And what the visa lottery, just to fill your listeners in, is it's a crazy thing when you explain it. People just can't believe we have such a thing. We give out 50,000 green cards every year to random people from around the world. There are the top sending countries, Mexico, China, Philippines, don't qualify. It's supposed to be for countries that don't send a lot of people. But there's no real, other than that, there's no real standards. I mean, you have to have minimal. You have to have like a high school education, which frankly you can buy a high school diploma in Nigeria for $10, you know, on any street corner. The standards are meaningless. What the relation to chain migration is that the visa lottery creates new migration chains. It brings new people in who don't have relatives for the most part, and then they all have relatives, and that starts a whole new migration chain from countries that we didn't have immigrants from. And it's immigration for its own sake. It's basically just gratuitously letting in people, not because they're rocket scientists or geniuses or, you know, terribly persecuted people who have nowhere to go, or moms and dads, the little kids of Americans. It's letting in people just for the heck of it. And there's really no justification for it.
And I understand, too, legislation pending from Lamar Smith again to eliminate this diversity visa program.
Yes, that's actually part of the
RAISE Act
bill the RAISE Act that he, and then over in the Senate, Senator Cotton and Perdue, it would also get rid of the visa lottery, which shouldn't be a heavy lift. I mean, it doesn't have any real justification. And that bill, just to flesh out the last part, like I said, it would get rid of chain migration, get rid of the visa lottery, and it would change the skill-based part of our immigration system to what is called a point system or a merit-based system. That's the way the president has talked about it. And it would keep the numbers that we take in that category the same, but it would simplify radically the way we pick people. So instead of the stupid paperwork, basically making work for lawyers, it would be much clearer, clear cut. How much education do you have? Do you speak English? What is your, you know, age? Are you in prime working age? And if you have enough points, then you just go into the pool to pick immigrants from. And that's however many you're going to pick, either a lot or a little, that's a much more sensible way to do it. So this RAISE Act really has a whole variety of important things to recommend it.
Now, while this is going on and the whole talk about DACA and so forth, what we do with this, we know we're also as a nation facing the issue of funding the government and to get us through this fiscal year. We seem to do it 2 weeks at a time. But Congressman Meadows, he chairs the House Freedom Caucus. He has seemed pretty adamant that there should be no DACA amnesty deal in the government funding bill this month. Is the government funding bill, is this a place for this sort of policy to come up, or should this whole matter of immigration be handled totally separately?
Yeah, it should be separately. I mean, Congressman Meadows is right. And basically, it was an attempt by the Democrats last month when we did a stopgap funding bill then to try to force this amnesty bill into the funding measure. And the Democrats flinched. They didn't, you know, they said, well, you know, we might shut down the government over this. And when push came to shove, they lost their nerve. And that's going to happen later this month when it comes up again, and with good reason. Any government shutdown fight is really kind of a PR fight.
Mm-hmm.
And do you really want to shut the government down over amnesty for illegal immigrants? That's not a fight they're going to win.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here. Mark Krikorian is our guest today from Center for Immigration Studies. Their website, cis.org, cis.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, Noah's Ark Explorer from the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, can you tell us anything new about the search for Noah's Ark?
Chris, the search for Noah's Ark is always on the minds of that set of people that have Ark fever, and I'm one of them. I've been involved in the search for Noah's Ark since 1970 and have led numerous expeditions to Mount Ararat. In the last 15 years or so, hardly anybody has legally been on Mount Ararat. We have, however, been able to search from satellite photography, but with no firm indication that the Ark has been found. The Bible does not predict that the Ark will be found, so we don't have that to look to, but we do have a lot of evidence. Hundreds of people claim to have seen the Ark, but we just don't have any proof. A lot of smoke, but no fire. The Ark did exist, that we're told back in Genesis, but does it exist today? Maybe.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
3 seconds. Yeah. So how do we handle the immigration issue? That's what we're talking about today with Mark Krikorian, Executive Director of Center for Immigration Studies. And there's a lot of back and forth going on in D.C. on this very issue. How do we handle the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA program? How do we deal with these issues? Do we put this as part of the spending bill or not? These are all issues that are hotly debated right now in the halls of government. Mark has testified often before Congress on these types of issues. They monitor them through Center for Immigration Studies, and certainly as they present a independent, nonpartisan research approach to this, certainly do examine and critique the impact of immigration, both legal immigration and illegal immigration, upon the United States. I'd like to hit a couple other issues here as well, and that deals with both discussions on E-Verify as well as the border wall. And Center for Immigration Studies has been a strong proponent of E-Verify. What exactly is E-Verify, and how does that enter into the picture here?
E-Verify is a free online system. It exists now. Anybody who hires people can use it. And what it does is it enables people, my own center's used it for years, it enables you, when you hire somebody and you take their paperwork for the IRS and Social Security, to enter their Social Security number and name and date of birth into a system, into this E-Verify system, to see whether that person, whether it's a real number, it matches, whether the person is actually authorized to work. Is he telling you the truth? And that's the important thing when I hire somebody, is I want to know that they're not a liar. The thing has been up and running for a number of years. Last year, it looks like more than half of all new hires nationwide were checked through this system, because a lot of big companies use it. The issue in Congress is making it required for all new hires, because probably the most important part of limiting illegal immigration is weakening the magnet of jobs that attracts people. Because, you know, some people may come illegally even if they couldn't get a job, if they have a relative or something like that. But most people who come illegally are coming because they want to work. They're not terrorists. They're not killers. I mean, there's some of that. They're not rapists, despite what the president said. Again, there's some of that. But most people are coming because they want a job. And the harder it is to get a job, the less attractive it is to come here illegally. So making this E-Verify system part of hiring for all new hires is a key part of limiting future illegal immigration. And from my perspective, that has to be part of any DACA deal, of any amnesty for these DACA illegal immigrants. It's going to pull in new illegal immigration, because people abroad are going to say, hey, look at that. Maybe even if we don't get a green card, maybe our kids will if we sneak in and stay long enough, just like those kids did. So in order to counter that, you need to have not just border enforcement, which is important, don't get me wrong, but most illegal immigrants coming in today, new illegal immigrants, don't come across the border. They fly in or take the bus or whatever it is. They come in legally with a visa and then just never leave. And E-Verify is much more likely to turn those people away, to make it hard for them to stay here and make it unlikely they'll decide to come in the first place.
Let's talk about the wall here, Mark, and how you feel, what is the critical nature of this wall? Because there are those who are saying, hey, it's just a waste of money. A wall's not going to do anything. It's not going to be effective. How critical is this wall between the U.S. border with Mexico?
It's important, but not critical, the way I see it. In other words, I'm not opposed to it. I just think that it's not, you know, in my top three things that have to get done. That said, there's a lot of places along the border that do have basically what you might call a wall already. And some places need a second layer. Some places need improvement, maintenance. Other places need one that don't have it at all. So it's not a bad thing. I just think the president has made a bigger deal of it than is necessary. Now, it's interesting that the result of that is that the Democrats hate the wall. Even those who voted in 2006 for 700 miles of border fencing, which is really kind of what we're talking about. I mean, with a fence wall, it's all, what's the difference in some sense? People who voted for it are now saying the wall is evil and we'll never fund the wall. And it's ironic because President Trump would probably give the Democrats their DACA amnesty for nothing other than some money for the wall. In other words, they could almost buy the amnesty. And even if they think it's a waste of money and won't do anything, if you want to amnesty 700,000 illegal immigrants and it'll only take $2 billion in money for the wall, why wouldn't you do it? But they can't, because the base of the Democratic Party, the hard left, you know, Bernie folks, are just berserk about Trump. I mean, they hate him irrationally. I mean, I don't like the guy particularly either, but they cannot control themselves. And so, ironically, they can't make a good deal from their perspective, which would be which is skip chain migration, skip E-Verify, not do any of that, just give the president the $1.6 billion he's asking for the wall, and the president would probably say, great, here's your DACA amnesty. They can't bring themselves to do that. It's kind of ironic, actually, and in a sense, it helps focus the discussion on the things that I think are more important, which is chain migration, E-Verify, and the lottery.
And speaking of this wall issue, I saw a story here where contractors are facing growing boycotts from Democratic-led cities that if they build on the wall, they're going to lose contracts or not be eligible for contracts in these communities.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's some of that, but it doesn't seem to really be making much difference. I mean, they had six full-scale prototypes of the wall built by different contractors. There were actually, it's in California, near the, right on the border, and they built, I don't know how wide it is, maybe 20 feet or so, 30 feet wide of wall, different styles, you know, because there's the different contractors of different designs. And what the Border Patrol has been working on now, I think for several weeks, maybe a month, is testing these prototypes, you know, trying to cut through them or how easy is it to climb over and all that stuff. So the point is, this is a process that's actually in the works. I mean, this isn't some hypothetical maybe thing. They're actually working on it. So obviously they got enough contractors willing to do it. I think that boycotting the contractors thing is more a PR stunt by some cities that weren't ever, don't even know who these contractors are and don't even hire contractors to do this sort of work.
Well, there seems to be another matter going on by communities, large cities, sanctuary cities, their defiance of federal immigration law. What impact do you see these immigration or these sanctuary cities having upon the matter of primarily illegal immigration? And now we have California as a whole defying our immigration law, in essence becoming a sanctuary state.
Yeah, this is a serious problem. And what a sanctuary city or sanctuary state means is that is not that the local police don't enforce immigration laws. That's not something local police do or anybody wants them to do. It's that when a local police or state police or somebody arrests somebody for something else, drug possession, drunk driving, you know, burglary, whatever it is, they have to book that person. They do the fingerprints, the mug shots, you know, the whole thing. You've seen it on TV. Fingerprints are all now automated. They're all digital. So it's electronic, and it immediately goes to the FBI. And now, this is relatively recent, it also goes to Homeland Security, the fingerprints, so that now they know not only whether this person was convicted of such and such in a different state, but they also know whether he was, say, deported earlier. Was he arrested by the Border Patrol 2 years ago? Whatever it is. They have his immigration rap sheet. And so what a sanctuary city does is that when immigration, ICE in this particular, Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, when ICE says, hey, you got this guy, fingerprints popped up, please hold on to him up to 48 hours as federal law provides for so that we can come and pick him up and deport him. Sanctuary cities say no, and they let him go. That's the key thing that makes a sanctuary city. And they're letting people go who then go on to kill people.
Yeah, we've seen some
happened over and
pretty
over.
Horrible things that have come out from this.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the that young woman in San Francisco, Kate Steinle was her name, was killed by an illegal immigrant who'd been deported five times, who returned to San Francisco specifically because it was a sanctuary city, and who had just been arrested and released by the cops, San Francisco cops, just not that long before the killing. And it had happened to other people. Kate Steinle was just the most, I guess, notable example, the one that got the most attention. But this kind of thing happens all the time.
Don't these cities have culpability in this?
You would think. There doesn't seem to be civil liability. I'm not an attorney, so I don't know. It seems like you should be able to sue. I don't know how that kind of thing works. But there should certainly be political liability. And at the very least, the federal government should be cutting money off for some of these communities. And that's what the Justice Department has been trying to do with certain law enforcement-related grants. But, you know, the ACLU and others sue to stop this, and we have enough judges now that really are no longer basing their decisions on law and are really just making up their policy preferences. And so it's been difficult. It's been very, I knew this was going to happen. It's very difficult to shut off the money for these sanctuary cities, federal money for sanctuary cities. I think eventually the Justice Department will prevail in shutting this money off, but, you know, it's not that much money. They need to take some stronger measures to stop this. I mean, because literally, what are sanctuary cities? It's basically the same as in the antebellum South, the states that seceded before that, they just said certain federal laws just didn't apply in their states, and they couldn't care less. It was nullification was the word for it. And that's what this sanctuary city movement is. It's nullification of federal law because the states just don't want to comply.
Where do you see the American people on this, Mark? Where is the nation as a whole on the immigration issue?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a big question. Who knows? I think there, if you're talking specifically about, for instance, this issue of DACA, I think the public, the polling shows there's pretty broad support for amnestying these young people. I think that's probably true. But there isn't broad support for amnestying them and then just teeing up another amnesty 10 years down the road. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's pretty broad support for the approach that, frankly, the president and the Republicans are taking, which is amnesty these sympathetic young people. It's a special, unique group of illegals, not the whole bunch of illegals, just them, in exchange for measures to make sure we don't have this problem in the future. I think that's broadly popular because people don't hate foreigners. People don't hate immigrants, but they want the law enforced. And frankly, it's even more than that. We really do have too much immigration. We're taking 1.2 million new people a year, and it's too much. We need a breather so that, as Senator Sessions, when he was still in the Senate, said, we have a chance to catch our breath and to knit our communities together into one nation.
We're going to take a quick break here on Crosstalk, and we'll come back here to learn what average people like you and I can do in regard to this issue. How do we let our voice be heard? In the meantime, if you'd like to get on board with your questions, our number is 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
Today, the hope that all believers on earth will be caught up to heaven is being challenged in new waves of criticism. Is the rapture actually taught in the Bible? Can we really expect Jesus to gather up his followers before the Antichrist is revealed? Will God pour out his wrath on believers? In the book, Can We Still Believe in the Rapture?, authors Ed Heinzen and Mark Hitchcock examine the concept and the context of the rapture with a thorough defense for the event. They answer questions such as, what is the rapture? Is there any historical precedent for it? Why do some Christians object to the idea of a rapture? And does the timing of the rapture really make a difference? Is it imminent? The authors explore the scriptures on these important issues. Copies of Can We Still Believe in the Rapture are available for a donation of $16 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
We'll be right back.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Mark Krikorian is our guest today from Center for Immigration Studies. And we hear about all these things, Mark. I mean, we hear about E-Verify, the wall, DACA, chain migration, the visa lottery, the wall. I mean, all of these things are going to be somewhere in discussion, somewhere on the table, as it relates to the givings and takings of legislation here. What can the average person do in regard to this? How can those who are concerned and listening to this, how can they get engaged in the matter?
Well, first thing they do is learn more about it, which you can do at our website, cis.org. We have a daily blog, and we've got a lot of research there. It's a way to basically learn what the issues are. And then for actually activism, which isn't what we do, we're a think tank. The best group that's a citizen activist group is called Numbers USA, and that's their that's the website, numbersusa.com, and they let you become a member. There's no charge or anything like that, and there's no spam or any of that sort of thing. And what they do is they connect ordinary folks in out in the country with what's actually going on inside on Capitol Hill. In other words, they have people there who really know, okay, there's a hearing on X, Y, and Z coming up, and there are four members on that committee that need to hear from you, and you're in their space, and here's the kind of stuff you should tell them, and here's how you can call their offices. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing.
Mark, we're starting to lose you there on the phone.
All right. You hear me now?
Oh, yep, got you there. Good.
Yeah, they're a big, big presence on Facebook. In fact, they are bigger on Facebook than the NRA. This Numbers USA is probably the most important, influential group in Washington you've never heard of. And so for actually getting involved in a direct political way, they're the best group after you learn about the issues from our website at cis.org.
Okay, again, folks, the website cis.org. That stands for Center for Immigration Studies, CIS.org. And then also to get more active in the arena of influence, numbersusa.com, numbersusa.com. And certainly the groups will keep you abreast of legislation and issues going on pertaining to that matter. Just before we pick up our first call, let me ask you, Mark, do you have confidence in Kirstjen Nielsen, Secretary of Homeland Security, on these issues? Do you believe she's really looking out for our U.S. interests?
As she sees them, yes. Some people on my side of the issue have been very down on her when she was named, and she's not the first person I would have picked. But, I'm willing to give her the benefit of the doubt. She has, she's only been there for a little while, and she has tried to make send a pretty strong message that she's tough on enforcement issues and the border. So in that sense, it's wait and see. I don't think she's as terrible as some of my fellow immigration hawks think, but she could be. We just don't know yet.
Let's go to Mark calling from Monroe. Mark, you're on the air.
Yeah, my comment is this. I'd like to say that I think Job chapter 12, verses 23 to 25 kind of depict the whole overview of the topic today. It says, he makes nations great and destroys them. He enlarges nations and guides them. He takes away the understanding of the chiefs of the people of the earth and makes them wander in a pathless wilderness. They grope in the dark without light, and he makes them stagger like a drunken man. I think this totally represents what the liberal left tries to do to undermine our nation's sovereignty.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Sure sounds like Congress to me.
Yeah. Roy is next in Bayside. You're on the air, Roy.
Hi. Liberal socialist Democrats get very much upset about possibly changing the virtual U.S. open borders policy, but I'll name three countries which liberals speak favorably about, and I ask, do Cuba, Japan, or Mexico have open borders immigration policies?
No, certainly not. And first of all, nobody wants to get into Cuba, so in some sense that doesn't matter. Mexico ironically, is getting a lot of illegal immigration from Central America and, ironically, from Africa and elsewhere, of people who are trying to sneak through to get to the United States. And they only allow it because they're all going to be going on. They don't want them to stay. Japan is the most interesting example, which basically has very little immigration. Their birth rates are low, and some of their businessmen are saying, we need to import more warm bodies from abroad. And the Japanese people are saying, you know, we'll live with slower economic growth if that's what it takes. We want to keep our country the way it is. We want Japan to stay Japanese. So it works for them. Japan's a, you know, it may not be growing rapidly, but perfectly pleasant place to live. You can drink the water. Everybody has a job. You know, it's what's, I'm not sure what there is, what's not to like.
Thank you, Roy. Mingo is calling from Texas. Hi, Mingo. You're on the air.
Brother Jim.
Yep. Mingo, need to have you turn off the radio there.
I did, Brother Jim.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I did. I was just listening because it's very educational.
Mm-hmm.
But, Brother Jim, I was calling. I live very close to the border here, about a mile from the river.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, people are crossing from all over. They've caught people from all over nations, you know, coming through there. So, I mean, we need to protect, like the first caller mentioned, we need to protect the United States, because if Cuba and the other nations don't do it. Now, Mark says, and he laughed about it, saying, who would want to go to Cuba, you know, a communist country? And he's right. But at the same time, we need to protect the United States. The other thing, Jim, that I wanted to comment was President Trump. In 1948, Israel became a nation. And look how many presidents have gone by. And President Trump had to make Jerusalem the capital mm-hmm. of Israel.
Yeah.
None of the other presidents.
Yeah,
and
that's kind of a separate issue than what we're talking about.
I know, Brother mm-hmm. Jim, but I wanted to mention it to Marcos.
Yeah.
He's very close to Washington, and I just wanted for him to know that, you know, in our area, we're Christians, and if a president goes along with the Christians, we're going to do it too, Brother Jim, and I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Mingo, for the call here. Mingo is saying here, Mark, as you heard, living a mile from the river and seeing a lot of illegal action taking place across the border.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think part of his point was, too, that it was, you know, it's not just Mexicans. In other words, the people from all over. And ironically, there's a lot of Cubans actually coming to across the Mexican border.
Mm-hmm.
And Africans, every day there are news stories in the Central American newspapers about African illegals that are arrested by local police. They just let them go because they know they're not going to stay. But, yeah, no, this is a serious problem. So even though there's not as many Mexican illegals coming over, because there really Mexican illegal immigration really has gone down. It's still big, but it's not as big as it used to be. But a lot of the slack is being made up by people from other countries, Central America, Africa, Asia, you name it, because there are 5 billion people in the world who are poorer than the average Mexican. And if they can get to Mexico, if we don't have real good border enforcement, they're going to be able to get into the United States, too.
Paul is calling from Florida. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to mention something that maybe Mr. Krikorian's unaware of, that last Friday President Trump tweeted that there would be no DACA deal without the wall, an end to chain migration, and the lottery system. Those three items, plus Chief of Staff Kelly had a meeting with the Democrats before the Christmas break and laid that out for them also. So the administration's on the record, and that seems to be cast in concrete. One more comment, if I may, that I think any deal that Trump would make with Democrats on DACA would be a fool's errand, because they haven't lived up to any of their agreements in the past, and there's no indication they would do the same on this. And plus, if they ever take control of the Senate or the House again, they'll just tear it up and have basically open borders again. So the best deal on DACA is no deal.
Thank you for the call here. Mark, any comment?
Yeah, I mean, his cautions are correct. I mean, the potential for a bad outcome is there. Don't get me wrong. But I think this is a real opportunity to get some changes that are important and that will be long-lasting, because once you put something into law, it's just a lot harder to get rid of. You can't just do it with the snap of a finger. If it's in law, you know, it takes 60 votes in the Senate to get over it, and the Democrats have only had that very briefly once. So, I mean, I understand the caller's caution, and his caution is well-founded, don't get me wrong, but I think there's an opportunity here to actually move the ball forward as well, and I don't want to miss that opportunity just because there's also the possibility it could go wrong. Anything could go wrong. There's always risk. It's worth the risk, in my opinion.
Is it even plausible to think that there's going to be 60 votes on anything in the Senate?
That's a good question. Because the Democrats have become so extreme on immigration, really just over the past 10 years, that it's possible nothing's going to happen. That's why I think, you know, it's entirely possible there won't be any DACA deal, no matter what I want, just because Democrats won't agree to anything that the Republicans would find acceptable.
We've got an anonymous caller phoning in. Hi, you're on the air.
We're at war, according to Islam. And the country of Islam, with 57 counties all over the earth, want to take us down. Why do we fool around with it and not do something about it while they're in lower numbers in our country? We can have them all leave peacefully and go back to the 57 counties of their country in the world, and we won't have to deal with them, or you're going to have the brick and concrete war like you see on the news on TV every day in the eastern and western countries. It's going to be here, and there won't be no stopping it. The government of America will be useless, and it'll be anarchy, okay, and it'll be overrun.
What about this issue here, Mark? I mean, we've seen the president even try to put the brakes on, a number of terrorist raiding nations, so to speak. We've seen many stops come up. The Supreme Court has given him, the nod, saying yes, he has authority for this. Yet we see continued challenges there. Is what this caller is saying making any sense?
Well, I mean, there's no question that Islam has a problem with the modern world, and that this impacts us. You're seeing it much more directly in Europe, obviously, because they have so many more Muslims and such a larger percentage. But my concern is that we're not going to have religious tests for immigration. It's just not going to happen, and I don't think we should. In other words, somebody just says, I'm a Muslim, and I pray five times a day to Mecca, and I fast during Ramadan, that's not enough reason to keep them out. What we need to have is ideological exclusion. In other words, we need to screen people out who believe in the this world parts of Islam that are bad.
Yeah.
In other words, killing apostates, killing gays, enslaving women, that kind of stuff is unacceptable, whatever your rationale is for it.
And we're up against a break right now. And yeah, those who would take Islam seriously for what it is, what the Quran teaches in those regards. We'll take more of your questions after the break. Our number 800-733-9829. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewradio.com. Recently, one of our listeners sent me a magazine out of the Rochester, Minnesota area. It was advertising Women and Spirituality Conference. As I flipped through the pages of the magazine, it was nothing more than the promotion of Mother Earth worship, Gaia Earth worship, yoga, which means yoga union with a Hindu god, spiritual feminism, which says that God is really a woman. And this is really nothing new. In fact, Paul addresses this kind of feministic Gnosticism in Acts chapter 19, verses 23 to 27. The feminist Gnostic god, false god, that they were worshiping there in Ephesus was named Diana. We also might know her as the Queen of Babylon, Eleutheria, Artemis. Yes, I believe the one world spirituality of a feminine god is growing, and it will lead to a woman that rides the beast, a false church in Babylon.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Mark Krikorian with us today from Center for Immigration Studies. Their website, cis.org. CIS.org. And also, he suggested, as far as staying attuned politically on these issues and involved, numbersusa.com, numbersusa.com. Let's go back to the phone lines. Dick's been holding from Franklin County, Washington. Hi, Dick, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that. I want to read the Supremacy Clause, which is Article 6, the second paragraph of the U.S. Constitution, and this relates to the sanctuary cities and the sanctuary state. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary, notwithstanding. Now, I don't know what's going on with Jeff Sessions, and of course, the American public doesn't know the Constitution, but all they have to do is go right here. You don't need any big research or anything. Just grab these guys who are violating the Constitution and throw them in prison. We'll take them to trial.
Dick, we'll have our guest comment. Thanks for raising the issue. What about what the Constitution says here, Mark?
I mean, this is a serious problem that we're having with judicial lawmaking. These judges are, and we've seen this in other areas, abortion and other areas, they are basically taking the law into their own hands. And immigration is the latest area, the most recent area we're seeing this. And it really is becoming a serious problem. Unfortunately, taking them to jail isn't the solution for judges. Impeachment is the solution for judges. And as long as the Democrats like the result, you're not going to be able to get impeachment because you need, I think, is it two-thirds or 60? I think you need two-thirds vote for impeachment in the Senate. There's no way that the Democrats are going to go for that because they like the result. I mean, this is a much deeper, broader problem in our democracy than just than immigration, which is bad enough, but it's a bigger issue. It affects abortion, it affects all kinds of things.
Thank you, Dick.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Donald in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question for Mark in this regards of the sanctuary jurisdictions that was talked about a few minutes ago. One thing I have not found any mention of is in the news media is by like city council members, city mayors, police chiefs, and others that are in charge of enforcing law, why, and yet they take actions to support the presence of illegal aliens within their
I'd like
to know why those people are not being arrested for federal offenses on that.
Which people?
Yeah, like the city council members when you vote to support new illegal aliens within their jurisdictions and shield them from detection by federal agents.
I mean, that's a good question because, you know, in a sense, they are harboring illegal aliens, which is a federal felony. And so it seems, you know, there is a case to be made that the San Francisco City Council, for instance, should actually be arrested and prosecuted for criminal harboring of illegal immigrants. The thing is, you know, that's a pretty serious measure. To me, that's kind of like a nuclear option that you want to resort to only after trying all other options. And we haven't, in my opinion, we haven't gotten there yet.
Thank you, Donald, for the call. Robert in Racine, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, I guess y'all know scripture things that are inclusive of the border ideas for Israel, but that verse, blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Mm-hmm. Does their organization give an influence of advice to impress people with biblical values? Because I'll leave a comment and then get off the air. This sanctuary is only going to be by submission to the scriptures of the Savior, if I'm not wrong.
The sanctuary movement, so-called, is just using that term. It's not, you know, obviously they don't have any concept of the, you know, sanctuary as laid out in the Old Testament or as practiced in medieval Christianity in Europe. They're just using the term because it kind of sounds good. So, you know, that's kind of a question of individuals. Do you, how seriously do you take this claim? But for them to claim, to make a religious claim for sanctuary based on this is, in my opinion, disingenuous and false, because they're just using the term as a marketing term. It has nothing to do with the scriptural concept of sanctuary as was practiced by the Israelites or as it was practiced in medieval Christianity.
Robert, thanks for the call, and we're going to pick up one last call. This was also Robert from Pensacola, Florida. You're on the air.
Yes, I'm concerned about Sharia law and how it is opposed in every way in respect to the American Constitution and our Bill of Rights. And if already I think they're trying to push, I know they are definitely in the countries in Europe, pushing for Sharia law.
And we have done full programs on that issue of Sharia, Robert, and thanks for the call. I guess the tie-in for today is there are those who come into our country who seek to subvert the very rule of law that we have, namely our Constitution, and certainly that's a concern, Mark, is for those who would like to push a law that is totally contrary to our own U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, which is why I think it's perfectly appropriate for there to be ideological tests rather than religious tests. It's not, do you believe Mohammed was the seal of the prophets? It's, do you believe that Sharia is superior to the U.S. Constitution? If you answer yes to the first question, I don't care. If you answer yes to the second question, then you have no business being allowed into the United States. That's the distinction we have to make. And we're moving in that direction a little bit, but not enough, in my opinion. And we definitely need to move more in the direction of keeping people who believe in Sharia supremacy out, not just trying to keep people who say that they're Muslim out, because there are plenty of people who call themselves Muslims who are perfectly innocuous, even patriotic people, because they don't believe in the dangerous provisions that other Muslims believe.
Okay, and again, going back to the Quran, and if they will take it literally or not enters into the equation here as well. Mark, as always, thank you so much for being with us here on the broadcast. CIS.org is the website to keep abreast of so many issues. Thank you so much, Mark, for carving time out of a busy schedule to join us.
Thank you very much.
And Mark Krikorian with CIS.org. Check him out and be informed on these critical issues, and certainly stay in touch with the news as well on these critical matters. Thanks for joining us.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.